Assalamu alaikum students. Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan اور مبشر ہمایوں کی طرف سے آپ سب کو خوش آمدید. Welcome to another lecture in financial management. In the previous lectures, we have covered the major areas of financial management, including capital budgeting, risk and return, capital structure and corporate financing, and short-term financing. In the remaining few lectures in this course, we are going to move into some of the ancillary areas. The first area that we will look at is that of lease financing, and I introduced this subject in the previous lecture. After this, we will briefly study mergers and acquisitions, and after that, international financing. Now, I'm only spending single lectures on these very, very important and broad areas. In fact, lease financing, mergers and acquisitions, and international finance are very broad areas, and you can spend several months, years studying them. In any case, let us first begin talking about lease financing. Lease financing is similar to the collateralized loan that we spoke about earlier when we were studying long-term debt. Now, this means that the lease contract is like a debt contract in many ways, and therefore, it has all the serious repercussions and consequences associated with borrowing money. Now, in the case of a lease arrangement, there are two parties involved, simply speaking. One of them is the lessor or the leasing company, and the other party is the lessee or the borrower. So leasing has become a very, very popular way of acquiring assets. In today's world, you find everything from furniture in a restaurant, knives and forks, to automobiles and cars, computer hardware, and even airplanes. So you have a whole range of assets that are leased. And it is estimated that worldwide, as much as 15, 20, in some countries, as much as 30% of the total assets controlled by firms have been leased. جس سے پہلے کہ ہم فرق قسم کی لیزز کے بارے میں بات شروع کریں, ہمیں ایک بنیادی کانسیپٹ کو سمجھنا ہے. What is this fundamental concept that we need to understand? It is a difference between ownership and control. Ownership سے مانے یہ مالکیت, the title or the ownership of a particular asset or property. Control سے ہمارے مانے یہ کہ آپ کسی بھی ایسٹ کو استعمال کر پائیں, بے شک کہ آپ اس کے مالک نہیں ہوں. تو وی نیڈ ٹو انڈرسٹینڈ دی ڈفرنس بٹوین اونرشپ اینڈ کنٹرول, بیکاز ان دی کیس آف لیز فائنینسنگ دی لیزنگ کمپنی اور دی لیسور اونز دی ایسٹ. دی اونرشپ آف دی ایسٹ از ان دی لیزنگ کمپنیز نیم, بٹ دے ہیو الاؤڈ دی لیسی اور دے ہیو الاؤڈ یو ٹو یوز دی ایسٹ or to control the asset and in return to pay a lease rental monthly or quarterly as per the agreement. So we are all familiar with leasing a car. The car is owned by the leasing company, or in certain cases it might be the car rental company. They allow you to rent the car from them and to use the car for a certain number of days, and you can control the car, you can drive it, you can drive the car over the city. In return, you pay the leasing company or the car rental company a rent. In the case of the car companies, generally you pay a rent every day. So let's first ask ourselves why leasing has become popular. Why do a lot of the companies in certain industries prefer to lease the assets instead of paying cash and buying them. This is the basic decision that companies are making. Should we pay cash and buy the asset? Or should we have a leasing company buy the asset for us, and then we will use the asset and pay them a monthly rental? Now, there are certain industries where there is an advantage to leasing. And, for example, industries where the cost of buying the assets is very, very high, and where the earnings are cyclical and not steady, in those kind of industries, the companies prefer to lease the assets. For example, the aeroplane manufacturing industry. So, when we talk about Airbus or Boeing, these companies are in the business of providing leased planes, and they're called wet leases. Other industries where leasing is a popular option are those where the, as I have mentioned, the cash flows and the earnings are not steady, and there is seasonality, and we see this in various kinds of industries, including, for example, the sugar industry. A third and very, very important industry where leasing has become very popular is the high technology industry, the high tech industry, and also the information technology industry. The reason for this is that in this industry, there is a very, very quick obsolescence period. What does this mean? It means that technology becomes obsolete and outdated very, very quickly. So, instead of firms investing their precious cash and resources in buying the asset and blocking their cash in the form of an illiquid asset, instead of doing that, these firms prefer to have a leasing company finance the purchase of the asset, and they use the asset, and when they see that the asset has become outdated or that there is a modern, newer, better version of the asset available, in the case, specifically speaking of IT, it might be computer hardware, it might be a new chip that has come out, and so on, then the company can decide to return the asset to the leasing company and to acquire the control of the more up-to-date or modern asset. So these are some of the reasons why in certain industries leasing has become a very, very popular option. Besides this, the terms of certain lease agreements require the leasing company to contribute and share in the maintenance and servicing of the assets. So for example, if we talk about the fathers of the operating lease, which was IBM, IBM started the operating lease with a very attractive offer. If somebody came to IBM to buy computers, then the IBM would supply the new mainframe computers without taking any money from the buyer. They would give them a supplier credit. Effectively, the buyer would be allowed to take the IBM mainframes, start using them, and then they would pay IBM a lease rental every month. Not only that, but IBM would also provide the buyer with a service and maintenance contract for keeping the computers working smoothly and efficiently, and also making any repairs in case there was any computer breakdowns or glitches. Now, let's talk about the types of different leases that are available in the market, and we will talk about three basic forms. The first one is known as the financing lease or the capital lease. The second one is known as the operating lease or the service lease. And the third one is the very, very creative lease, which is known as lease and buyback. So first, let us talk about the financing lease. The financing lease or the capital lease has become one of the most popular kind of lease arrangements. It is also very popular in Pakistan. Now, in this kind of lease agreement, there are two things that must be remembered. One, that the lease is fully amortized, and I will explain that in a minute. And second, that the lease is not cancelable. So let's talk about the first point. The lease is fully amortized. What does this mean? It means that the leasing company, or the lessee, specifies the exact duration of time during which the lessee has to make regular lease rental payments. And these lease rental payments include both the asset value or the principal component as well as the profit or the interest that the leasing company is charging for effectively borrowing, or rather in the case of the leasing company, for effectively lending the money to the lessee. Keep in mind that the leasing company is basically lending money to the lessee in the form of an asset. They've blocked their money. The leasing company has bought the asset for them and allowed the lessee to use the asset. So they have to charge them. The leasing company has to charge the lessee for the time value of money. We spoke about this concept at the beginning of the course. And you can call this interest or markup. So in the case of the financing lease, the lease rental is fully amortized. In other words, it includes both the recovery of the principal amount or the asset value as well as the recovery of the profit or the interest or markup. Now, the second thing to remember, which I mentioned, was that the lease is not cancelable. So once the lessee or the borrower has signed the lease agreement promising to pay the leasing company monthly lease rentals for a period of, let's say, 1 year, then the lessee cannot decide 6 months later to cancel the lease agreement before time. He has to continue making the lease rentals every month for a period of 1 year. You might think this is very strange. Why? Because you have a borrower or a lessee who is willing to repay the amount of money to the leasing company before time. So shouldn't that be a good thing? Well, no, not necessarily. Why? Because the leasing company has calculated the internal rate of return that they expect to make from this lease arrangement. And they have already calculated the timing of the cash flows that they expect to receive. So any change in that will affect the profitability of the leasing company. So in the case of the financial lease, it is not cancelable. So what are some of the advantages of the financing lease? Well, firstly, naturally, if a firm does not have equity capital available, or if a firm does not have cash reserves or retained earnings, then it has to rely on some form of debt. And leasing is a very convenient and quick way of raising debt capital. That is one advantage of the financing lease. Another advantage, which is there in many countries, but not in all countries, is that because accounting laws vary from one country to the other, even though there is a general accounting standard that is followed in the British Commonwealth and in America, but still there are variations in the accounting laws and taxation laws. Now, in certain countries, lease financing does not have to appear on the balance sheet of the firm. In other words, in some countries, when you take a lease, you do not have to show that as long-term or short-term debt on the liability side of the balance sheet. Therefore, the lease value does not affect the balance sheet footing or the bottom line on the balance sheet. Now, this is an advantage for those companies that do not have enough earnings to justify the purchase of large assets. And the advantage that the lease gives is that instead of showing the asset as appearing on the asset side of the balance sheet, and instead of increasing the amount of debt that the company has taken because lease can be seen as a kind of short-term or long-term debt, depending on the duration of the lease. Instead of making these changes in the balance sheet, a firm is instead able to show the lease rental as an expense in the profit and loss or the income statement, and that lease rental constitutes a tax saving. In other words, this is an expense that will reduce the income before tax. Therefore, the firms will be paying less tax. So, this is when what we mean by expensing out an asset. Instead of capitalizing, or instead of the asset appearing on the balance sheet and creating a large change on the balance sheet of the firm, which is may not be desirable always, instead of creating that large change on the balance sheet, firms can instead expense out the asset regularly over a period of time by showing it as a lease rental that is taking place every month. Now let's talk about the second kind of lease, which is known as the operating or the service lease. And as the name suggests, in this kind of lease, the lessor offers a maintenance and service contract, which is also part of the lease. So unlike the financing lease, which was simply addressing the financial aspect of the acquiring the assets, in this case of the operating lease, we are talking about both a financing aspect as well as a maintenance and service contract. Now, it should not be surprising for you to find out then that operating leases are generally offered by companies that are large suppliers of real assets and hardware. So, as I mentioned, the fathers of the operating lease were IBM, and they provided this facility to their buyers, that their buyers would come to them, sign the lease, operating lease contract, and they could pick up IBM mainframe computers, and instead of paying cash upfront for the entire amount of purchases, instead of doing that, the buyers had the advantage of paying IBM a lease rental every month. And IBM would also service and maintain and take care of their machines. So this was a good arrangement. Later on, and still, large companies like Boeing and Airbus supply airplanes to various countries around the world according to what is known as a wet lease agreement. So we won't go into the mechanics of the wet lease, but let us talk a bit more about the operating lease. Another way, and a very simple way for you to understand the operating lease, is to think about the time that you have gone out and rented a bicycle or a motorbike or a car. Car rental companies effectively operate under the operating lease arrangement. The advantage of operating leases that I should mention is that they can be cancelled. So, they do not have a fixed maturity attached to them. And the other big difference between the operating lease and the financing lease is that operating leases are not fully amortized. In other words, the lease rental charged in the operating lease does not fully account for the principal amount as well as the profit. And let me explain this by way of a simple example. So let us suppose that we are talking about a car rental company, and this company has a brand new car, perhaps a Honda Civic, whose value, let us assume for convenience, is 1 million rupees. This company is in the business of renting out the car with the driver at a rate of, let's suppose, 1,000 rupees a day. Now, you or I or anybody else can go to this car rental company and we can rent the car for, let's say, 1 or 2 or 3 days. And we would be allowed to take the car with their driver and use the car for whatever we need to do. Now, after the 3 days are over, you will pay the car rental company 1,000 rupees per day, which means if you rent the car for 3 days, that you will pay them 3,000 rupees. And then you will surrender the use of the car and the car and driver will go back to the company. Now, the company has only made 3,000 rupees from you, but this car is worth 1 million rupees. So naturally, this is what we mean when we say that operating leases are not fully amortized. It means that the leasing company, or the lessor, in this case the car rental company, does not expect to recover the whole 1 million rupee value of the car from you in 3 days. Logically and naturally, of course they don't expect that they will recover the full value of the asset plus a profit from every single person who rents the car from them. Their objective is different. They expect to lease the car out once to one person and then to lease it out again and again and so on. So they keep re-leasing the same asset out, and this is how they recover the lease rental. And they have in mind, for example, if the value of the car is 1 million rupees and if they charge 1,000 rupees per day as lease rental, then simply speaking they will recover their investment in about 1,000 days, which is approximately 3 years. And here I'm not including the profit or the markup that they want to add to this. So this is the case of the operating lease. Now let's talk about a third and very interesting kind of lease that is known as the lease and buyback. And this is very interesting because, for example, if you want to open up a small business like a restaurant or a cafeteria, and let's suppose that starting off this business will cost you maybe 300,000 rupees and you don't have enough money and you don't have friends who can lend this money to you, but you have a car whose value is about 300,000 rupees, then you can start off the business using the concept of sale and lease back. How's that? Well, very simply, you would take your car to a leasing company and you would offer them that they buy your car from you at 300,000 rupees. In other words, the ownership of the car will be transferred to the leasing company and the leasing company will pay you 300,000 rupees cash. You are still using the car yourself. The ownership and the title deed of the car is with the leasing company, but you are using the car and they have paid you 300,000 rupees cash. Now you have enough money to start the business. So maybe with the 300,000 rupees you start the restaurant, and this restaurant starts generating cash flows of perhaps 50,000 rupees a month. So from these 50,000 rupees a month of cash flows from the business that you started up, you can pay the lease rental of 30,000 rupees a month to the leasing company. Now, if the duration or the maturity of this lease was 1 year, then after 1 year, at 30,000 rupees a month, you would have paid 360,000 rupees back to the leasing company. Remember that the company had only paid you 300,000 rupees. And after a period of 1 year, you would have paid them back 360,000 rupees, which is more. And of course, it has to be more. It is 60,000 rupees more. And that 60,000 rupees represents the profit or the interest or the markup that the leasing company is charging you because of the time value of money. So this is a very, very creative and simple way of mobilizing your assets in order to raise debt capital. Now, let's move on to the final portion of our look into leasing, and that is the part in which we need to do numerical calculations and assess whether it is better to lease a particular asset or to buy it. Remember, I mentioned that the fundamental decisions that firms and individual persons are making is whether they should pay cash and buy the asset or whether they should lease it by way of a leasing company. So how do you numerically calculate and do the calculations that will help you to decide whether it is better to lease the asset? And to answer this question, we simply have to go back and refer to our old concepts of present value and IRR. And these are our old tools from capital budgeting that we used in share price valuation and that we used again in capital structure, and now we're using them again in lease financing. So the first value that needs to be calculated is known as the net advantage of leasing. And the net advantage of leasing is defined as the present value of the cost of owning the asset minus the present value of the cost of leasing the asset. Now we're talking about the present values and we're talking about costs. And if the net advantage of leasing is greater than zero, then it is better to lease the asset rather than to pay cash and buy it outright. So if the NAL, or the net advantage of leasing, is greater than zero, then it is generally better to lease the asset. Now, let's talk in more detail about what we mean by the present value of the cost of owning the asset. So what is the cost of owning the asset? So when you own an asset or when you go out and buy the asset by paying cash, the first cost that we spoke about early on in this course was the initial investment, which we called I sub naught. Then we spoke about the operating expenses or the operating costs and the maintenance and servicing costs for the asset. And then finally, the cash flow that affects this is the replacement or the salvage value of the asset when you want to sell it at the end of its economic life. So these are the different cash flows that have to be accounted for in calculating the cost of the asset if you buy it or if you own it. And very simply, calculating the present value should be very easy for us because we use the old discounted cash flows approach, and we discount each cash flow by the 1 plus R discount factor. And this was 1 plus R to the raised to the power T, where T is the time period. So we're talking about simple, discrete discounting, which we have been speaking about throughout this course. Now, what do we mean by the second term in this equation, which was the present value of the cost of leasing? What is the cost of leasing? Well, the cost of leasing is, number one, and primarily, the lease rental payment. And secondly, the cost of leasing includes whatever tax savings that are associated with lease rental payment. Remember, as I mentioned, that lease rental is a financial expense that appears in the profit and loss statement or the income statement. And therefore, it reduces the taxable income, and therefore, there is a tax saving attached to it, and that is a real positive cash flow that should be taken in account in calculating the present value of the cost of leasing. Once you have these two figures, then it's a simple matter to calculate the NAL, or the net advantage of leasing, that is equal to the present value of the cost of owning or buying the asset with cash, minus the present value of leasing the asset. Now, I should mention here that in calculating the net advantage of leasing and in computing the present values, we need to use a discount rate. And what discount rate should we pick? Well, the argument is that the cash flows, in this case, when we are talking about the cost of owning the asset and when we are talking about the cost of leasing, are quite fixed and certain. There is not very much uncertainty in these costs. And therefore, because of the low uncertainty, it is recommended that you use the cost of debt or the interest rate as the discount rate in calculating the present values. The present value calculations are not an easy matter because you need to forecast the cash flows associated with the costs of the asset and the cost of leasing. You need to pick a value for the discount rate, and if you are being very, very conservative, then you could also pick the risk-free rate of return for the T-bills. But the criteria that most financial managers use when they're analyzing leases is the IRR, the internal rate of return. And we spoke about the IRR when we were studying capital budgeting very early on in this course. Simply speaking, the IRR is a percentage value, and it is easy to compare the IRR value to an interest rate that is being charged by a bank on a loan. And that makes the IRR a very, very convenient measure that is used in leasing analysis. So, very simply speaking, in order to calculate the IRR, we simply set the NAL, or the net advantage of leasing, equal to zero. We plug in the values for the cost of the assets and the cost of leasing, and we solve this equation for the discount rate R. And that discount rate R can be solved using trial and error or iteration, and that is equal to the IRR for the lease. And this IRR is a figure that is used repeatedly, and practically speaking, this is the figure that managers of leasing companies and also lessees who are effectively borrowing the funds are interested in. Because you can compare this figure to the interest rates that are charged by banks and the market rate of interest. Finally then, keep in mind that when we are talking about leasing analysis, that when a company takes on a lease, then the IRR of that lease has an impact on the cost of debt, which has an impact on the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, for the firm. Remember that the WACC, simply speaking, is defined as the RDXD plus REXE, the weighted cost of debt plus the weighted cost of equity. And remember that leasing is a kind of debt, and it affects the cost of debt in the WACC, or weighted average cost of capital, equation. Now, I should also mention in passing that the lease financing can have an effect on your original capital budgeting decision. And in a way, this is an important point to bring up, because you should keep in mind that even the capital structure decisions that we have been speaking about in the previous lectures, as well as the corporate financing decisions related to how much short-term and long-term debt a company should have, keeping in mind its optimal capital structure, these decisions can have a bearing on the capital budgeting decision i.e. when a firm is deciding which is the best project to invest in. Now, what I'm saying here contradicts the conclusions of the pure Miller-Modigliani theory that we spoke about in Capital Structure. You will remember that Miller-Modigliani, in their purest sense of an ideal market and a perfect world, said that capital structure and corporate financing have absolutely no impact on the capital budgeting decision. Why? Because capital structure, in other words, the ratio of debt and equity in a particular company, has no impact on the value of the company. And why is that? Simply because we have been calculating the value of the company based on the forecasted cash flows. So it doesn't matter how a company decides to divide or split the cash flows amongst its investors. What matters is the net incremental cash flows coming into the firm. They determine the value of the firm. Then whatever profit or whatever cash flows the firm decides to distribute to its shareholders and to its debt holders has no impact on the generation of the value. Now, keeping this in mind, this is what Miller-Modigliani said. And this was the case for efficient markets and a perfect world, an ideal situation. But practically speaking, if you do the capital budgeting analysis first, then you have to pick a discount rate. And if you are a company or a firm, then you might pick the weighted average cost of capital, or the WACC, as a discount rate for your NPV analysis of various projects that you are interested in investing in. So companies have opportunities to invest in many different projects, and they use the capital budgeting or the investment criteria of NPV to decide what is the best investment. But to do the NPV calculation, they need to pick a discount rate. And companies often pick the weighted average cost of capital as a discount rate. Now, the problem is that companies sometimes find themselves in a soup. And this problem arises when they decide to pick one project based on the NPV criteria during the capital budgeting phase at the beginning. Then, many months later, they might find that they have selected project A, and that project will require a very large amount of debt financing in the form of a bank loan. And if they get, or if they require such a large bank loan, then they will have to pay a higher interest rate. So they find that they should have used a higher cost of debt and therefore a higher weighted average cost of capital and therefore a higher discount rate in their NPV formulation. So in other words, if they had used the higher discount rate in calculating the NPV of this project A, then the net present value of that project would have been lower. When the discount rate goes up, the net present value goes down. And if the net present value of that project goes down, then there might have been another project which was rejected earlier at the capital budgeting stage, which might have been better than this project. So in other words, what I am saying is that sometimes capital structure and the exact mode of financing has a feedback effect on the capital budgeting process. Of course, we have been ignoring this throughout the course because capital budgeting that we spoke about at the beginning of this course and investment decisions regarding which project or investment a company should pick to invest its money in should be based not only on the slight numerical differences in the NPV values, but they should also be based on the corporate strategy, the long-term strategy. Important issues like enhancing market share and other important factors like improving the operational efficiency of the company. So there should be many, many more important factors, strategic and operational, that should influence the choice of a particular project at the capital budgeting stage. When we spoke about capital rationing, we also mentioned the importance of a limited budget affecting the choice of the best project. So the conclusion to all of this is that yes, capital structure and the exact way in which you finance the investment in a new project might have a feedback effect on the discount rate that you used in order to calculate the net present value of that project, thereby changing the relative ranking of the different projects. But what I am saying is that there should be other more important strategic reasons and operational efficiency reasons for a company to pick a particular project as the best project during the capital budgeting stage. I would like to stop the presentation of the new material for this lecture right here and go over some of the important points regarding lease financing that we have spoken about in this lecture. We began by mentioning that the lease contract or the lease arrangement is like a collateral loan, and if the lessee or the borrower does not pay the lease rentals on time, then he can be declared a defaulter and be declared bankrupt. So there are serious consequences associated with the lease contract. We also mentioned the difference between ownership and control. In this case, the leasing company owns the asset, but you as the lessee can control it. So they might own the car, but you are allowed to use it provided you pay a lease rental. We mentioned that in certain industries, there is an advantage to lease financing. For example, those industries where the cost of capital is, or rather the investment size in the assets is very, very large, or where the earnings are unstable and cyclical. For example, the airline industry, there the companies, for example, PIA or Singapore Airlines or Emirates, prefer to buy or rather to acquire the airplanes in the form of a wet lease. Also in high-tech industries, where there is a quick obsolescence period and where technology gets outdated very quickly, companies prefer not to lock up and tie up their money by buying assets, and instead they prefer to lease the assets from a leasing company. We then spoke about the first kind of lease, which was the financing or the capital lease, and we mentioned that it has two unique features. Number one, that it cannot be cancelled, and number two, that it is fully amortized. Fully amortized means that the leasing company recovers both the principal value or the asset value as well as the profit portion or the markup portion. There are some advantages to this lease, namely that in certain countries it does not have to appear on the balance sheet. And the other advantage, of course, is that lease rentals are part of the financial expenses that appear on the profit and loss or income statement, and therefore they are tax deductible, and it means that there is a tax saving associated with them. We then spoke in this lecture about the operating lease, and we mentioned that this lease is different from the financing lease because in the operating lease you have a financing component as well as a maintenance and service contract. The operating lease is cancelable, generally speaking, and it is not fully amortized. And we mentioned that oftentimes the operating lease is provided by vendors and suppliers of hardware. For example, IBM provides operating leases for their computer hardware, and companies like Boeing and Airbus supply their airplanes on lease arrangement. Finally, we spoke about the third kind of lease, which is the lease and buyback, and this is a very creative arrangement whereby you can sell your asset to the leasing company and then pay them a monthly rental in order to reacquire the ownership of the asset after a certain period of time. At the very end of this lecture, we spoke about the valuation of leases, and we mentioned that the important parameter in lease analysis is the net advantage of leasing, which is equal to the present value of the cost of owning or buying the asset minus the present value of the cost of leasing the asset. And if the NAL, or net advantage of leasing, is greater than zero, then it is better, generally speaking, to lease the asset. We also mentioned that you can use the cost of debt or the risk-free rate of interest as the discount rate in calculating the present value. But the most important and the most commonly used criteria that is used in the leasing industry is the IRR. And you can calculate the IRR for the lease simply by setting the NAL equation equal to zero and inputting the values for the cost of assets and the cost of leasing and solving the equation for the discount rate R using trial and error or iteration. Finally, I close this lecture by mentioning that although Miller and Modigliani, in their capital structure theory in its purest form, said that capital structure is entirely independent of capital budgeting decisions, if you want to be very, very accurate, then yes, you do need to take into account the effect of the exact manner in which you raise the financing for a new project, because that can have an effect on the weighted average cost of capital, which you are using as a representation of the discount rate in your net present value equation. And you are using this net present value equation in order to rank the different projects and choose the best one. So yes, there is a feedback effect of corporate financing on capital budgeting, but we mentioned that it should be minor because capital budgeting decisions regarding picking the best project should not only be based on minor differences in the NPV that can be caused by the discount rate, but they should take into account strategic factors and issues of operational efficiency as well. With this, I would like to close this lecture. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, the Virtual University of Pakistan, and Mubashir Humayun, I would like to thank you for your kind attention and patience. Khuda hafiz, aur assalamu alaikum.